The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max. SmackDown. Review.
All right, this is the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live review for May 2nd, 2017, and I will not be hosting tonight. That is going to go to Mr. Paul Leeser, who is here.
Heyo.
And taking my spot on this show, because I have, I got to get this New Japan roundtable done so it's not a waste for everybody that worked on it. Mr. Harry Broadhurst from Wrestling Unwrapped.
Greetings, everyone. And if you want to read that New Japan Roundtable, you can do so at www.w2mnet.com.
Yeah. Thank you for the plug there, Harry. So you guys have fun talking SmackDown here.
We will certainly try, because I was sort of in and out on this show because it didn't entirely grab me the whole time, but... they open, Jinder Mahal gets the title take away from him at a photo shoot, by Shane. This kind of irked me a little bit. I was hoping Jinder would, like, just hold on to the title. I found it entertaining and a lot easier to at least feel like I should hate him. Now he's just back to being dude again.
The issue that I have at hand with Mahal having the title taken away from him, is that Randy Orton didn't even appear on this episode of SmackDown. What would have been the harm of waiting to give the title back to Orton on an episode of SmackDown that Orton's on? Why not let Mahal carry the belt around for another week or two and make it seem like he's some semblance of a threat instead of a dude who's just going to eat an RKO in 2 weeks?
Right. That's sort of where we're at. And they kind of tried to fix that in this match here with Sami Zayn, which I will admit was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Jinder, I think, gets underrated as far as ring work goes. It's not like he's a technical wizard or anything like that, but he can go, and Sammy certainly did his part here, and a fine little 11-minute match that sees Jinder get the win with some help from the Singh brothers here.
Yeah, 10 minutes and 55 seconds, Jinder Mahal over with the Cobra Clutch Slam. Do you buy the Cobra Clutch Slam as a legitimate finisher for him? I mean, granted, he's been pretty much treated as a jobber for most of his WWE career, but this is a move that's been used by other people as a finisher before, and I specifically refer to, like, Billy Gunn using it as the one and only. Do you buy the move as a finisher?
The Patriot used this too, didn't he, to jump on the Wayback Machine here?
Full Nelson Slam, not Cobra Clutch.
Okay. I mean, it works for him. I think I would prefer something a little stronger, but... Like you said, he's been a jobber for most of his run, so it's hard to buy any move that he's going to do as a finisher.
That's fair, actually.
Sammy takes another loss here, and I mean, there's going to be the perpetual feud with Kevin Owens at some point, and whatever else they try to do. But he's sort of spinning his wheels around.
Based on talking smack last week, I think they're setting him up for a feud with Baron Corbin for Backlash.
There's that too, and the Baron was another one I might have blanked, but I don't recall him on this episode of SmackDown either.
He was suspended last week on talking smack for hitting a WWE official.
They very casually mentioned that on commentary, now that you say that, so... Shane also earlier in the evening has a segment where he's talking with Jericho and AJ, setting up the U.S. title match for the evening, which is your main event. AJ doesn't really care who it is, although we do get a nice tease of the Y2 AJ throwback stuff with the shirt and everything. And, you know, I mean, it was fine, I think, for what it was. The main event was quality, if you ask me, just as good as their match at Payback. Kevin Owens gets the win back, gets the belt back. Absolutely brutalizes Chris Jericho afterwards, too, to send him on his Mary Fosse tour.
It's the Tour of Jericho. He's hitting the road, man. All credit for that joke goes to Patrick Ketza. He made it on the W2M chat, on the W2M wrestling chat. I won't steal his joke without giving proper credit.
That seems like it'd be right up your alley, though.
Anyway, it would be a joke that I would make, and we all know that Jericho's one of my favorite wrestlers too. So I wouldn't be above broaching his gimmick in order to do so.
True. What'd you think of the match?
I actually like the payback match a little bit more. I like the payback match more than I like the WrestleMania match as well. I think that the psychology and the storytelling involved in the finish of the payback match gave it a little bit of an advantage to me, given the actual psychology of focusing on the finger after he used the same finger that he used at WrestleMania to break up the pinfall off of the Codebreaker.
I agree. That was a great touch during that match, too. But, I mean, this one was much more about seeing Kevin being aggressive and trying to, you know, he's out for blood this go-around. Forget broken fingers and the cutesy stuff. It's murder time for Kevin Owens.
Right. I can understand what you're saying there.
And then, like I said, Owens attacks him post-match. They stretcher him out. You think they'll take Jericho out on the road on the stretcher?
I think it would be hilarious if he kept kayfabe while doing the Fozzie tours, but I don't see it happening.
A man can dream, though. A man can dream. let's talk some Ty Dillinger here, too, because he gets a squash match against Aiden English, who I kind of wish we get a little bit more mic time, but of course they seem to be at least teasing a small little mini feud here between the two as the second time Ty has interrupted him. And, Ty squashes him in about a minute. Has a spinny torture rack variation now to the tiebreaker to sort of differentiate it from AJ Styles' Ushiguroshi. Good stuff here. Ty seems to be, they're doing right by this guy so far, I think.
First, I love the opera singer gimmick for Aiden English, and I'm glad since the release of Simon Gotch, he's gone back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Second, as far as the finish goes, fireman's carry into the facebuster there. It's similar to a move we've seen Billy Kidman use in the past, but Kidman would drop you off to the side rather than spinning you around. So almost like a hurricane variation of it, which I really enjoyed, and I do think does differentiate it from AJ Styles' Ushiguroshi, which was something I was wondering when Ty came up to the main roster because his finishing move was so similar. As a matter of fact, it's the same move as AJ Styles' signature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right, and I'm glad that they finally got around to it. It took them a couple weeks, but, excuse me, they absolutely nailed it here, I think, too. And if we're going to keep on going with squashes here, Dolph Ziggler also pretty much squashes Sin Cara, even though Cara gets a good bit here as Dolph sort of prepares for his big matchup, even though it's yet to be announced with Shinsuke at Backlash.
I think it was a horrible idea having Sin Cara get as much offense as he did in this match.
I think
that when you're setting Dolph Ziggler up to face Shinsuke in his WWE debut, Dolph needs to be crushing people that aren't on his level. And clearly, even back to on Raw, Sin Cara is not on the level that Dolph Ziggler has been portrayed to be on since the brand split.
Mm-hmm. I can see where their mind is at, though, because this is also Sin Cara's first, you know, TV debut on SmackDown since the Superstar Shakeup. So maybe them wanting him to at least look like he matters a little bit was on their minds in this, but I'm of the same mind as you, is that Dolph needs to absolutely be killing it, especially if Sin Cara is going to wear highlighter-colored stuff to the ring. Like, that blue atrocity he wore was awful.
Is it just me, or were you waiting for, like, the Naomi lights to go down and his his stuff to be, like, glow-in-the-dark, too?
I would not be shocked.
We know he's not above stealing people's gimmick. This is the fake Sin Cara now portraying Sin Cara now, after all.
It is true. It is true. I mean, you know, it's Dolph is always sort of up and down booking wise, so I guess we really shouldn't be surprised at this, but you would think with him going against Shinsuke, they would want to do this as well as they could, and a little bit of a rocky start here so far for that one.
Yeah, my question is how exactly is Dolph going to get treated in that match against Shinsuke? I think that's going to be the big question going forward there. I don't think there's any question that Shinsuke is going to win the match at Backlash, mm-hmm. but are we looking at something to like what Shinsuke had when he first came into the company when he was squashing people on NXT television? Or are we looking at him having a match similar to the ones that he had against, say, a Finn Balor or an Austin Aries or a Bobby Roode in NXT?
It's an interesting thing to sort of bandy about here, because obviously Dolph is somebody who sort of figures prominently into at least the mid card, if not the top of the card right now on SmackDown. Shinsuke sort of being positioned to be up there if we're going to believe the WrestleMania plans for next year is him and AJ. So yeah, you can't just have him straight up run Dolph over, right? I mean, you like an extended squash maybe of like 5-6 minutes if they want to, but something tells me they're going to want this to take up some time.
Oh, I'm fully expecting anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes, and I think that that's going to do more to help Dolph than it would do to establish Shinsuke.
Mm-hmm.
I would have found, as much as I like Ziggler, I would have found somebody different for Shinsuke's debut, just somebody that he could absolutely truck in his debut.
There's a sort of a double-edged sword there, because if you just have him truck people for a while, they usually carry that on for 3, 4, 5 months sometimes, whereas I think immediately putting him up against somebody like a Dolph or, maybe down the road in another match with Sami Zayn or something like that, sort of putting him at least already in that echelon of top stars, I think does a little bit more and gets him into that scene quicker than just him running dudes over.
Well, and I think another thing in that regard too here, and I just thought of this as you were mentioning that in regards to the whole waiting 3 or 4 months for people with the squash matches too, is they kind of had him come out as they announced that Cena was leaving to take more time off. So mm-hmm. clearly they're expecting Shinsuke to fill an upper mid card to main event level spot on the SmackDown roster.
Very, very true. And like I said, I mean, if they're going to get him to a level where it's not just fans like us, who already are familiar with Shinsuke and his work and what he can do as far as being viewed as a top-tier talent, getting the normal WWE audience to buy into that, they're going to have to do something a little bit quicker than just letting him squash people. So I think that's where that's coming from, too. Let's move on to the women, though. The Welcome Committee, which is just a terrible name for a stable, but Tamina, Carmella, James Ellsworth, and Natty sort of jumped Charlotte after an interview, beat her up for a little bit, and they were scheduled for a tag team match. It was going to be Naomi and Charlotte against Carmella and Natalya. Naomi sort of goes at it alone for a while because obviously Charlotte's too, hurt to fight. Well, then out comes Charlotte about halfway through the match to try to play savior. It doesn't really work out, the numbers game, and James Ellsworth and all that get the better of him, and Naomi ends up eating the pinfall to Carmella. I thought this was pretty good. It's solid build. We're working towards a 6-woman match, obviously, for Backlash, as Becky Lynch comes out post-match and seems to ally with the heels and instead turns on him and gets beat up for her efforts.
My big question to come out of this is going to be what happens once they have Tamina back in the ring, because history has proven not to be kind for her with ring work. And the only one of the members of the heel team that's actually anything resembling an efficient worker is Natalya. All three of the better workers are on the babyface side of this match. Although I've said many times before, I'm still not sold on Naomi.
Naomi's biggest attribute is her athleticism. And that's why I think her match with Charlotte worked out so well the last couple of weeks, is because they're just such natural athletes that they just sort of gel together in that fashion, and it really worked out for them. I think, it being a multi-woman match, you can hide a lot of these problems, though.
Yes, I agree, and I think that would be the best kind of match to reintroduce Tamina to the ring, because this has got to be Tamina's first match in, 6-8 months? Somewhere in that range.
It's got to be longer than that, because she was off camera for a while, even before her father got sick and died. So I feel like it's been longer than a year since she's been in the ring.
I'm going to have to look into that and see if I can find an answer.
Cause I
while we continue. Yeah, well, while we continue this podcast, I will go ahead and check profightdb.com and look into that. Go ahead, yeah. Carry on, Paul.
I was about to say, I don't remember her being involved in all the PCB Women's Revolution stuff.
So. She was on Team Bad originally.
That's right.
It was Sasha, Naomi. Yeah, Sasha, Naomi, and Tamina.
Tamina, yeah. What else do we have to talk about on here? Shinsuke, we already did. We talked about gender. Oh, the tag team stuff. The Fashion Police got a segment.
I was going to say, that might have been the best thing on SmackDown tonight, Paul.
they run through their list of charges against the Usos, and Bree says he's finally going to bust them up. But, I mean, just their delivery and all this was absolutely wonderful.
I think they may have had the best line of the year in the WWE thus far. They're walking around annoying.
Hold on. Officially, just to get y'all's thing out of the way here, it has been almost a year and 1 month since the last time Tamina wrestled on TV. It was a SmackDown, the SmackDown in London, April 19, 2016. Italian Paige beat her and Naomi.
Wow.
So. There you go.
That's a long time to be out of the ring.
Well, you know, on TV.
Right, yeah. I was going to say, I see live events where she's working matches going all the way back to February, so.
Right. Okay.
For those of you interested in looking this up, be careful going to this website. Will result in a quality loss of free time. www.profightdb.com. It is the Internet Wrestling Database. It's one of my personal favorite websites. Okay,
or just go to Cage Match.
Yeah, I usually use Cage Match, but dealer's choice there.
Same difference. Yeah. It's pretty much six of one, half a dozen of the other. But back to the segment with Breezango, or Fabrice, as we originally wanted them to be called. My favorite line there, and possibly the best line of the year in the WWE thus far, was the one that they delivered with Tyler saying, they walk around annoying people, and then Fandango responds, we can't have that. Breeze says, that's jaywalking, and then without missing a beat, Fandango looks at him and goes, and Jimmy walking.
It's just a joke so lame you can't help but laugh.
I had to pause the episode of SmackDown in order to compose myself before I carried on. It's the little things sometimes, Paul.
It really is, and they've been an entertaining act, obviously, before they got this opportunity to challenge for the tag team titles, and some people, myself included, I'm sure you as well, Harry, and several others out there in the wrestling community have been sort of waiting for them to do something, and they finally do. Do you think they have a chance at all of maintaining anything resembling a push after the tag match?
I think that depends if they get that Heath Slater Rhino moment or not. I think if they go over for the tag titles, then there are enough heel teams on SmackDown for them to defend it for a while. Another interesting concept there, too, would be to see American Alpha challenge them after American Alpha turns. That being said, I think that the proper thing to probably do here is going to be to have Jimmy and Jay cheat at Backlash and build up to a bigger pay-per-view for Breezango to have their moment there.
I would be okay with that. They need to build teams here, so an extended feud with the Fashion Police would be great. Not only for the Usos, because it's a fresh team for them to feud with after seemingly feuding with American Alpha since the brand split started, but building these other teams by feuding with the tag champs is a smart move to do here, and so hopefully Breezango can take the moment and run with it like so many other people tend to do on SmackDown when given the opportunity.
That was kind of something that we didn't talk about in regards to the Kevin Owens thing, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this here, because I thought it watching Talking Smack the entire time that they were interacting with each other. Is it just me, or does it seem like we're on a slow burn to Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon?
Maybe. The way Kevin Owens talked to people on Talking Smack or in interviews or commentary or anybody who isn't really a wrestler is always just like degrading and sort of, you know, your opinion doesn't really matter to me. And whether it's, you know, the commissioner or the general manager of the brand or whatever, it's just glorious to sort of watch him not give a shit about him.
Oh, no, he's always been that incredibly condescending dick, and I kind of appreciate that about the Kevin Owens character, but it just seems like this is kind of how they started things off with Styles and Age, with Styles and Shane, and we saw where that ended up leading, so I wouldn't be surprised to see possibly us leading to Kevin and Shane possibly at SummerSlam.
I mean, they only did AJ and Shane because they didn't have anybody really for AJ to face after, you know, injuries and whatever else took place in the build-up to Mania last year, or this year, excuse me. So, yeah, I mean, if we get Kevin Owens and Shane at some point, that's fine. I mean, we obviously can see what Shane did with AJ, and whether that's more of a testament to AJ at this stage in his career or whether it's a testament to Shane just really pouring his heart out and trying to give him everything he's got, I'd be okay with him and Kevin Owens going one-on-one.
All right. The other thing we didn't touch on is Dancing Lana.
What's your thoughts on the gimmick? Do you think apparently this is supposed to be what Emelina was going to be, but seeing as that fizzled before it even hit the screens, they decided to give it to Lana here.
You know what thought process I get watching this? I know you're a big Ring of Honor fan.
Mm-hmm.
Does the name Reina Von Tosh ring a bell?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thought process that I see when I see something like this here. It's kind of that old-timey, dancey, strippery kind of gimmick. It's not going to matter if her ring work can't back it up, and I don't know if it can. I know she's been working NXT house shows in order to try to improve on her in-ring capabilities, but we'll see what happens when she gets into the ring if she can back it up.
The few instances we've got to see her in the ring as far as what's been televised, which is WrestleMania pre-show and it few select other occasions, she seems like she's a fair athlete, but I don't know if there's really any wrestling ability there to be had. Obviously, we've only seen her less than a handful of times, so it's hard to tell. But she's a great character worker already. We've seen her do all that with Rusev, so I feel like she can pull the gimmick off outside of the ring. It, like you said, it, inside the ring is going to be where the proof of the pudding is, but I mean, I felt like Eva Marie would have worked, even though we know she's awful in the ring. There was enough heel heat there to carry over legitimately anything she was ever going to do. That could be the same here.
If Lana starts as a heel, then I think she has a better chance because she'll be having the opportunity to work with people like Becky, and to a lesser extent now, like Charlotte. And I think that'll do nothing but help her progress in the ring.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. And obviously, the more time she spends down at NXT in the Performance Center, Cyril Del Rey is a goddess of wrestling. So she could teach pretty much anybody to do anything. So I have all the faith in the world there, too.
I'm 90% sure that goddess thing is trademarked by Alexa Bliss now. You owe her money for infringing her gimmick.
Well, she could talk to Sarah Del Rey about that.
No, Sarah Del Rey was the original queen, but that's beside the point.
It's whatever. She's great. That's all that matters. I guess there's nothing less for us to do but to put a number on this bad boy, Harry. What you going to give it?
5. I actually think Raw was better this week. Top to bottom, I enjoyed Raw more. I think Raw had better storytelling this week. I think Raw had a better main event this week, which is odd because everyone knows I'm a huge Jericho fan. And we had the interference in the main event on Raw, but it tied into the stories that they were trying to tell, whereas they told the story that they were trying to tell, but to me, it didn't seem like it quite reached the levels that they did at Payback.
Yeah, I think 5 to 5.5 in there is about fair. This is a sort of a blasé SmackDown, business as usual. Here's some stories. We're sort of moving along in the direction we've been going, but it's nothing earth-shattering this week. And I agree with you. The Raw main event this week was absolutely incredible and just can't speak well enough about it. And not to say that the main event on SmackDown was bad. It just, that triple threat was incredible. Best match on TV I think I've seen this year. So
I do want to say that we should be cognizant of the fact that people that may not know this, but they are preparing for a European tour starting tomorrow. So this was kind of slim picking SmackDown, as usually happens when they're getting ready to go for these tours.
See, honestly, it didn't look that way to me because pretty much everybody that's been a major player on SmackDown, with the exception of Orton, was there tonight.
Right, and Baron playing the suspension.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, your point's there.
Not to mention, too, obviously there are plenty of talented hands on SmackDown as well. We're in kind of a holding pattern until the Backlash pay-per-view with what they do and don't decide to do at that pay-per-view. Plus, there are other people that they still have to work back into the scene on SmackDown as well, such as Luke Harper, for one, Eric Rowan, to a lesser extent.
Do you guys think New Day's not showing up at all until Kofi is okay, or...?
That seems to be the way they want to play it from what I'm hearing. Apparently Big E's officiating weddings these days.
Apparently he's only doing that on the weekends, so I don't know, and it's very select. I don't know if they're going to wait till Kofi comes back. Isn't he out 6 months? Like, that's a long time to wait. I would think maybe they wait a month or two or till they clear out whatever they're doing with Breezango and the Usos or something like that if they want to have Xavier and Big E challenge at some point.
This seems like the perfect opportunity to push Big E as a singles with Xavier as his mouthpiece.
I would be okay with that. I don't think that's what WWE wants to do with them. They're a hot act in the tag team division. They're relevant in there usually most of the time. Although after they lost the titles, one could argue they really weren't. But they are still a hot name.
Yeah, I think they would be a little scared about, well, are people going to think that New Day's over or all that kind of stuff, you know?
Speaking of Kofi, too, did you see that shirt he had on Twitter where he said Karma broke Dash's jaw?
Huh. man.
Would recommend giving Kofi a follow on Twitter. He's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, him and Big E are both, all three of them, really.
Big E is absolutely hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, all three of them got their game going on the Twitter machine.
It's so true.
Definitely need to check them out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that pretty much does it for our SmackDown here. Not a great show, but not awful either, just sort of there.
Well, there you
go. So tempted to hit the Roman Reigns line here, but I'm not going to.
You know, anytime we can just not talk about Roman Reigns is probably better for the show in general. So,
it's true.
You know, so yes, you know, thank you to Harry for filling in here. And of course, Paul doing his, you know, usual wonderful, awesome job. And of course, hopefully you guys will enjoy what you heard here. You will give us a subscribe on the iTunes or the Stitcher, wherever it is that you listen to us on, you know, a subscribe on the YouTube channel if you like it on, if you like listening on YouTube, on wherever it is that you hear us at. And of course, check out W2Net.com for not only the podcast posts, but, you know, roundtables for the wrestling and other stuff that's not wrestling related. So, you know, and until next week when we're talking more SmackDown, we'll see you later, everybody.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.